Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Women's Soccer Zone. Good to be back. Thank you to those that listened to, downloaded and gave feedback on the first episode. So what do we have in store for you on this episode of the audio magazine? Well, we will of course have a look at the Ballon d'Or nominations that were announced last week. Not too unpredictable if we're honest, but it is worth going through that list and getting some of your views. We did ask for you to feedback on Twitter some of the views that you have. We will have a look at the UEFA Women's Champions League. Obviously, the round of 32 has now been completed after the second leg ties were played since we recorded the first show. And we will also have a very quick look at the World Cup qualification European playoffs that took place this past weekend. Italy and Holland gaining slender leads from their first matches. We also have an interview with Glasgow City striker Morgan Marlborough, and we will, of course, have our roundups from our various correspondents across Europe, the United States, and from Down Under in Australia. So rather than wasting time with this intro, let's get cracking.
Women's Soccer Zone would like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So no better to start on this episode of the show than the news this week of the Ballon d'Or long list. 10 names on the nomination sheet for 2014, which will of course be trimmed down to 3 nearer to the time of the ceremony, which will take place in January. So looking at the 10 names on the list, they are Nadine Angora of Germany, Vera Bekete of Spain, Nila Fischer of Sweden, Nahomi Kawasumi of Japan, Nadine Kessler of Germany, Marta of Brazil, Aimi Yama of Japan, Louisa Nasib of France, Lotta Schelin of Sweden, and Abby Wambeck of the United States of America. Now, I have to be honest, I don't really know where to start with this one. I think many will have predicted some of the names on there. I think others, maybe people will be a little bit surprised by. There is, of course, a glaring omission that many seem to agree with, and that is, of course, the NWSL MVP Kim Little. Obviously, I spoke to Kim in the first episode of Women's Soccer Zone and did obviously mention the fact that she might be on the list, and she came across as a little bit embarrassed, but that's the modesty of Kim. But to have omitted her off of the list completely, I think is a real oversight by the judges, and I think it's a real shame that her talents haven't been recognised. Another player that people seem to have been disappointed by that isn't on the list is of course Lauren Holliday, who for the second season running has been consistent and an ever-present and a real influence on that FC Kansas City side in the NWSL. Other names that I mentioned on Twitter that I think probably should have been in there is the likes of Ramona Backerman, who has obviously had a very good season out in Sweden and has of course qualified with the Swiss national team for their first World Cup next year. Lara Dickenman for me is consistently a high performer for Lyon, and maybe because of the position that she plays as a fullback works against her in terms of being recognised for the reward. I look at players like Anya Mittag, who has had another fantastic season in Sweden, has scored a lot of goals for Rosengard and has shot them to the Damallsvenskan for the second season running. And I look at other players such as Jennifer Marijan, who is starting to make a name for herself at Frankfurt and is, of course, a consistent performer for Germany. And finally, as biased as it might sound, Jess Fishlock, I think, has had another good season for the Seattle Reign and was obviously named in the NWSL Team of the Season. There will be people that individuals don't think should be on the list. Nadine Angora, for me, hasn't had her most consistent season in the NWSL. Started pretty inconsistently, but did gradually get better as the season went on. Abby Wambeck's had her problems with injuries this year, and I think even she would admit that she's not had the best year in her career. She's been in and out of the United States team more due to the competition that she faces rather than the performances that she's been putting in. But let's have a very quick look at the managers list as well, which was also announced. We have Philippe Bergeroux of the France national team. We have Peter Dedevbo of Nigeria. We have Laura Harvey, who obviously is a manager of Seattle Reign. Ralph Kellerman of Wolfsburg, Maren Meinhardt of the Germany under-20 side, Norio Sasaki of the Japanese national team, Pia Sundhag of Swedish national team, Asako Takamoto Takakura of the Japanese under-17 team, George Vilda of the Spanish under 17 team, and finally Martina Vos Tecklenburg of the Swiss national team. So that rounds up the list. I have no complaints with the manager's list. I'm sure that people will feel that there are some omissions on there. I would say that it's very, very difficult to get 10 people on there due to the jobs and the fantastic jobs that some people have done. But I obviously asked for people's views on the nominees in the players category. So let's have a quick look at what some people had to say and what they felt about the announcement this week. I'm going to start with Owen, who said Wombeck and Angra shouldn't be there. Both have done little this year, could easily be replaced by Little and Press. I'm going to move on to Sylvan Jame, a good friend of mine, who said Ballon d'Or has a lack of quality individual performances in 2014. Wombeck, Angra and Schelling examples. Elaine said in Little, Holiday and Mittag, out Angra, Wombeck and Schelling. Jen Jensen said, I like Abbey and Angra, but did their body of work in the last year stand out as top 10? I wouldn't put Marta on that list either. Our German correspondent Brian Maguire simply says, Little and Mittag in, Wombeck and Angra out. Ian H says, Jess Fishlock is an obvious shout. W League title, NWSL Shield, NWSL assist leader, captained Wales to highest ever ranking. Very difficult to argue with those stats, Ian. I had no idea that Jess was the NWSL assist leader, so well done on doing your research. Hannah says, I'm not saying Wombeck or Angra aren't great players, but there are others who clearly outbid them. She also says, I also thought about Le Sommer, Sauerbrunn, Tine and Aluko. Actually worth giving any Aluko a bit of a shout out there, because despite the fact that not many people get to see the FAWSL, Eni has had a very good season for Chelsea ladies and for the England national team. So not a bad shout that one, Hannah. Jacob, my friend in Seattle, says Kim Little should be on there because she dominated NWSL. Wombeck shouldn't because she missed half the season. And that actually goes back to what I said regarding injuries. Abby Wombeck, of course, missed a number of games due to a number of knocks that she received over the course of the campaign. Brad Goff says, an absolute shocker to exclude Kim Little and Lauren Holiday. Emma Follis, who has of course been on the show before, who plays for Aston Villa Ladies, said, how is Kim Little not even on there? Nicole said, can FIFA and Credible ever be used in the same thought? Well, probably a bit harsh, Nicole, but I'm sure there will be people that find it difficult to disagree with you when they look at some of the names on there, probably. Blog Olympic Marseille Feminine said, less credible than ever. Abby Wombeck, Nadine Angra, Lotta Schelling have nothing to do on 2014 list. And I'm going to finish on Everton Ladies, who says simply, defo Kim Little for me. So thank you very much for your feedback and comments on the Ballon d'Or nominations. And when we come back, we're going to start our roundup from around the leagues.
Women's Soccer Zone. It's all about the players.
So now we go into our roundup from around the leagues, and being a UK-based show, nowhere better to start for us than in England. And the major piece of news that broke over the weekend was the fact that Sunderland Ladies will play in the Women's Super League One next year after winning the second division, only needing to match the result of second place Doncaster Rovers Bells, and they were able to do that. A 4-0 win away at Millwall Lionesses secured the North East club's passage into the first division, and despite a valiant effort from Doncaster Rovers Bells, who won 9-0 away at London Bees, they will have to settle for another year in the second division. A fantastic achievement for Sunderland, for Mick Mulhern, the general manager, and for Claire Robinson, the head coach of the side. From a personal perspective, Sunderland are a team with rich history, having produced a number of international players, probably should have been in the WSL from the outset, but better late than never. So congratulations to them and to all their players. Of course, the WSL one has now finished. The other piece of news, of course, was from about 2 weeks ago when Manchester City sprung a bit of a surprise in the FAWSL Continental Cup, beating current holders Arsenal Ladies. Izzy Christensen grabbing the only goal in the game in what proved to be a pretty cagey affair, certainly in the first half, but the game definitely did open up in the second half. Not much more to report from England. We will go through the Women's Premier League pyramid over the course of the winter. Of course, the FA Women's Premier League sits just below the Women's Super League, and we will bring you updates from that over the course of the season. But we will now go into the Eurozone, and I will start with the roundup from Sweden. So Linda Eriksson, what's been going on in the Damallsvenskan?
During the final game day of the season in Damallsvenskan, Örebro secured second place in Champions League play with a 2-0 win against Eskilstuna United. Third place Kopparbergs Göteborg, who had a small chance at second place ahead of the round, lost away to Kristianstad despite two early goals from Manon Melis. League champions Rosengård, who had already secured the title, finished their season with a 4-1 win against Växjö despite fielding a very young team. Kirsten van der Veen and Ramona Bachmann each scored one goal, but it was 17-year-old Nathalie Persson who impressed the most with her two goals. The day after the league finished, all of the nominees for the Swedish Football Awards were announced, with Ramona Bachmann, Hedvig Lindahl and Anja Mittag as the three contenders for Damallsvenskan's Most Valuable Player. With Mittag finishing the season as top goalscorer and top assist player, she is probably a shoo-in to take home the award on the 10th of November.
So congratulations to Örebro for claiming the second UEFA Women's Champions League place. Of course, Linköping missing out this year, but did overcome Liverpool Ladies in the current competition. So they are through to the last 16, but won't be competing in next year's competition. So that rounds up Sweden. We will now move over to France and our friends at Footdel. So bonjour, my friends. What's been going on in the French league?
Bonjour, Kieran. Here are the latest news from the French Division 1. After 7 games of the first division, we have a curious coincidence definitely worth mentioning. The first 6 teams in the classification are exactly the same 6 that ended on the first 6 spots at the end of the last season, and this in exactly the same order. Lyon and Paris remain in the top. They're the only teams that won all their games, followed by Juvisy, Montpellier, Guingamp, and Soyou. At the bottom of the classification, Saint-Étienne and Arras, who were fighting to stay in the top tier last year, are having a bad start. On the other hand, the three newly promoted teams are advancing correctly, especially Metz, who after losing first 4 games, won twice and had a tight game with Guingamp. Issy, who was at the bottom of the classification despite having a well-spirited team, finally won a game and could be climbing up in the future. As most national teams, Les Bleus were playing last weekend against Germany. The French team made history by winning for the first time ever against Germany in Germany. With the World Cup only a few months away, France had a great collective game and certainly gained plenty of confidence with this win. For the record, the young Claire Lavoget, whom you might have heard of during the U20 World Cup last August, earned her first senior cup with this game. Regarding the Champions League, let's remember that PSG won against Benelux champion Twente, and that Lyon pretty much demolished the Italian champion Brescia 14-0 in the 2 games to advance to the next round. Looking ahead, November will be an exciting month in French women's football. Lyon and Paris will meet 3 times in the first 2 weeks of the month, twice in the Champions League, which is a bummer for the French football, and once in the Championship. Also, we learned recently that the French national team will play against New Zealand and Brazil at the end of the month, so we have plenty to look forward to this November.
Big thanks to our friends at Footdel for giving us the latest on what's going on in France and some exciting internationals to look forward to for fans of the international team. So moving on very swiftly, we now move over to Germany and I bring in our German correspondent Brian Maguire. So Brian, what's going on over there where you are?
International break meant that the Bundesliga gave way to the national team this weekend and their friendly against France, which was played yesterday in Offenbach. After a year of pretty straightforward qualifying, it was a chance for the national team to gauge where they are against the best of the world ahead of next summer's World Cup. Germany came into it with some key injuries, but supposedly a strong enough squad to cope and compensate for that. What happened on the pitch, however, was a sobering realisation that some players, including European Player of the Year Nadine Kessler, are simply less replaceable than others. 2 goals in 3 first-half minutes were enough for France to win the game and they looked comfortable throughout. Germany, on the other hand, looked sluggish, second to the ball and wasteful in possession when they got it. They began with a very experienced team, but even changes at halftime, bringing in the likes of Melanie Leupolz and Paulina Bremer, failed to make any dent in the French superiority. Next up for the Germans is Sweden midweek, another of these big tests, and they will need a big improvement throughout the squad. The weekend before saw the 8th round of the Bundesliga and what looked like 3 easy wins for the candidates. However, Wolfsburg was surprisingly held at home by Jena to a 0-0 draw. The champions' inconsistent form may also be down to that Nadine Kessler injury. Bayern Munich were on TV the day before and killed the game very early on with 3 super first-half goals, 2 superb finishes from Vivian Medema that shows that she's acclimatizing to the Bundesliga, which is good news for Bayern and bad news for everyone else. Frankfurt also had a very good win against Leverkusen to keep up their challenge at the top of the table. At the bottom of the table, there was a surprise last weekend as MSV Duisburg fought out a surprising 3-3 draw against Turbina Potsdam. It only gives them 2 points from 8 games, the same as Herford, but for Inka Gring's team, that was a very big morale-raising result. There's no Bundesliga after the game against Sweden this week because next week is the Cup. There are a couple of juicy ties in there, Jena versus Bayern Munich and Leverkusen versus Frankfurt. The Bundesliga will not return until the weekend of the 9th and 10th of November.
So thank you to Brian and to our European correspondents once again for giving us their comprehensive roundups from their region. As mentioned in the intro, of course, the UEFA Women's Champions League last 32 has now come to a conclusion. No real surprises with many of the big hitters through to the last 16, the likes of Wolfsburg and Frankfurt coming through their ties pretty comfortably. Lyon absolutely hammering Brescia to overcome them in a convincing manner, while PSG had a slightly more difficult tie against FC 20, winning 3-1 on aggregate. Unfortunately for England, Liverpool ladies have crashed out, as already mentioned, just after our Swedish roundup. They, of course, went out to Linköping. Despite winning the first leg, they were comprehensively beaten out in Sweden. But better news for Bristol Academy, who were comfortable winners over Ireland's Rahini United. They will now face a glamour tie against Barcelona in the last 16. As I say, no real surprises. And certainly the comeback of the tie was probably Glasgow City, who overcame Polish champions Medic Konin, trailing 2-0 from the first leg. They managed to come through 3-0 in the second leg after extra time and set up a last 16 tie in Switzerland against Zurich. And that tie and that fact that we are mentioning Glasgow City ties in nicely with our interview for this show. And it is with the FC Kansas City and Glasgow City striker Morgan Marlborough, who is settling into life in Glasgow very nicely. So I caught up with her to talk about life in Scotland, the NWSL, and of course at FC Kansas City. So here she is. Okay, thank you for joining me on this episode of Women's Soccer Zone, Morgan. I guess the best place to start would be, how are you settling in to life in Glasgow?
You know, I'm settling in well. All the people over here, the coaches, the players, the owners, they're very accommodating, very welcoming. And so far, I'm just having a great time over here.
How did the move come about? Because it's not common for American players, especially American players who have under 23 US women's national team caps next to their name, to come and try themselves over in the UK, but more so to try themselves in Scotland.
You know, after season in the States, I contacted my agent and said, I want to keep playing. Is there any opportunities for me? I wanted to be able to play consistently. I didn't get as much playing time as I hoped to in my rookie season with Kansas City. So I was trying to get some more games under my belt. And my agent found this opportunity for me in Glasgow, and it seemed like the perfect fit. You know, their tradition of success was very alluring to me, and their style of play, the possession oriented, I think fits my style. And so it just seemed like a great opportunity to take advantage of.
And how have you found the standard of the league? We know that Glasgow City are quite dominant when it comes to domestic competition, but you've also had an opportunity to play a bit of UEFA Women's Champions League as well, haven't you?
Right. Yeah, I would say in the Scottish League, you know, I definitely think that our team's the most talented team. So that provides good training sessions for me. But overall in the league, it's lower than it is in the States. But Champions League was just awesome experience. Got to play in two games against the Polish champions, and those were higher level than the domestic games in Scotland. Just the speed of play was higher, and I really enjoyed the competition, and I'm glad that we got to come out of that stage, and now we're headed to the final 16 against Zurich.
But you've joined the club at the right time, haven't you? Because you've already had a chance to lift some silverware, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we won the league title. We're going to be in the Scottish Cup final November 16th. And, you know, it's just been such a fun experience.
Tell me about the UEFA Women's Champions League game. You mentioned the tie against Medic Konin of Poland, 2-0 down after the first leg. What was it in that second leg that really pushed the team through to overcome that deficit? Because that's a hell of an achievement to overturn a 2-0 defeat from the first leg, isn't it?
Definitely. You know, in that first game, I think first, you know, 30 minutes or so, we came out pretty strong, and I felt we were dominating the game. We had some chances early on that we didn't take advantage of. Throughout the whole game, we had some chances to score, and we didn't. And I think as a team, we knew that we didn't play as well as we could have and should have. And but we were also confident that we could come back and beat them and take ourselves to the final 16. And so in that second game, everyone was just confident and focused on us and what we needed to do to win as a team. And it was just a great feeling. You know, we all worked so hard out there for 120 minutes and be able to beat them 3-0 and move on to the next leg was such a great feeling.
Now, I asked Kim Little, I interviewed Kim Little earlier this year, and I asked her if she could distinguish the difference between the NWSL and the UEFA Women's Champions League. And she said it's actually very difficult because obviously you're playing in the NWSL, you're playing a domestic side, and in the UEFA Women's Champions League, you're playing against a team from a completely different country. From your perspective, you've already said that Glasgow, you are the strongest team. The competition probably isn't there that exists in the NWSL. But what did you notice were the major differences between playing in the NWSL and playing in the Champions League?
You know, I think I would have to agree with Kim on what she said. It's harder to distinguish because you're playing teams from different countries. But I do think a similarity is that it's just very competitive. You know, you have to win or you're out. And I think the NWSL games are very competitive. Each game, you're not going to go out there for the most part and beat a team, you know, by 6 goals. So I think the speed of play and the competitiveness are very similar, but it's kind of hard to distinguish the differences, I guess.
Is it a bit of a shock to the system when you come up against a team from the Champions League? Obviously, you mentioned you've got Zurich in the last 16. You've been playing more in the Scottish League. You will have been winning games, some of the games, by quite big margins. Then to come up against teams where it's very close, how do you adjust to that, knowing that the competition is going to be that much more fierce?
You know, I just kind of remember the games that I did play in the NWSL and the competition there. And I just prepare myself, you know, this is going to be a tougher game. You've done it before over in the league, and just prepare like that. And so that's kind of how I prepare.
Okay, no problem. How are you getting on with communication with your teammates? You said in your BBC interview that in the first week in Glasgow, you admitted accents were a bit of an issue.
Yeah, you know, sometimes there's still an issue, especially over the phone. Someone will call me and I'll literally have to ask them what they're saying 3 different times. But at the beginning, for example, our coach, he would say something and I would literally just stare at him and he could just tell I had no idea what was going on. But as I'm coming to understand the way certain people talk, it's easier for me to understand certain teammates over other teammates. But I feel like I've done a lot better over the past 7 weeks of being able to understand everyone.
What's been the appeal of Glasgow for you off of the pitch? What are the things that you've kind of been doing and enjoyed off of the field?
I really like City Centre. It's like kind of a downtown area of Glasgow, and just a ton of restaurants, a ton of shopping. I like to go in the coffee shops and read or just people watch. So that's kind of what I do. We train in the evening, so throughout the day, you know, I kind of just take my time getting up, and then I usually, you know, go to the gym or go to a coffee shop and do a little bit of reading, or I watch a lot of Netflix.
Netflix is everyone's savior, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, look, it sounds like things are going really well in Glasgow, and I'm sure that the supporters of the team are very interested to see you at the club. Certainly from someone that reports on the game, it was an interesting move and one that I wanted to talk to you about, hence the request for the interview. But let's work our way backwards a little bit. You, of course, had your rookie season in the NWSL with FC Kansas City, a victorious rookie season for FC Kansas City, coming on out on top, winning the NWSL championship. Give me a little summary of how you think the season went for you personally.
I think that every day in training, I just focused on getting better and working hard and helping the team in any way I can. That's kind of what I focused on. And then, like I said earlier, I didn't get as much playing time as I hoped, but I was just trying to be patient, and whenever I did get that chance, I tried to take advantage of it. And I think, from my first appearance compared to my last appearance in NWSL, I think that I improved, became a little more confident and more kind of aware of how fast the game was played and kind of what I needed to do personally to help the team best while I was on the field.
As well as obviously getting the experience on the field, I imagine that training every day with a team like that, where you've got fellow forward players like Sarah Hagen, Amy Rodriguez, Lauren Holiday, can only improve your all-round game as well.
Definitely. I even talked to A-Rod about that. She's asking me how my first professional experience was, and I told her, I think I get better every day just from the players that I'm training with. Everyone's so talented that it pushes you to a higher standard, and knowing that you have to be your best every day to compete with everyone else at training.
Tell me what the celebrations were like after you won that championship game against Seattle Reign.
We were so excited. Seattle obviously, dominated the league, the whole season. We came in second, and then when we had the chance to play them in the final, everyone knew what it was going to take to win, and I think it was a solid team effort, and everyone was so excited. After the game, we went to Buffalo Wild Wings, and family and friends, and everyone was there just eating and just enjoying each other's company and being excited.
How much confidence was there in the squad going into that game? Because you've already mentioned Seattle were so dominant during the regular season. They had a difficult tie against Washington Spirit in the semi-finals of the playoffs, but they were favourites going into that game, especially with home advantage. What was the confidence like going into that game in the squad, and what did the coach say to you guys to try and give you that extra push?
I think everyone was very confident. Overall, our team, I think, was a very confident team. We had lost to them first time we played them in the season, and tied them twice, I believe. And every game was very close. We could have won. So I think everyone was very confident, knowing that if we worked hard and played our best, that we definitely could have a chance to win. Some of the stuff I just mentioned, was kind of what the coaching staff was telling us as well.
So continuing to work our way backwards, we've already mentioned we're in your rookie season. As a player coming out of college, going straight into the professional game, how much of a shock is it to the system in terms of the standard? You're obviously playing week in, week out in the collegiate system, but then to be drafted in the second round and then to be playing against US women's national team players, players from abroad, real experienced, professionals. How difficult is it to adjust, and what do you have to do as a rookie to try and adapt as quickly as possible?
I think I was pretty lucky because, like I said, I was drafted from my hometown team, which meant that I was already in Kansas City, starting in December. So starting in December, I was training with the girls that stayed in town. So there's probably about seven of us that would train regularly. We would train once a week with Vladko on the field, and then we would train on our own, doing a little 3v3 and stuff like that. And so I think even that helped me adapt to the coaching staff earlier, adapt to some of the girls, and realizing how much faster. I think that was the biggest thing for me, was just a lot faster game at that level. So that kind of helps me. And then coming into preseason, I was already, my nerves already had settled, and I was a bit more confident, knowing, that I had been there for a couple months already working.
Do you get a say in any way as to where you might be drafted or where you might go? I think, as I said before we came on to interview, we don't have that system in England, and we certainly don't have it in Europe. I think the US is unique in terms of how it brings through young players from professional sports from college into professional sports. It's not just soccer, it's basketball, it's American football, etc. As a young player that is ready to be drafted, how much say do you have in terms of where you might end up? And do you actually get any option in terms of, if someone drafted you, would you be able to say, do you know what, I don't actually want to go there?
you know, you don't really get any say at all. If you wanted to say, if you got drafted somewhere and said you didn't want to go there, that team owned your rights in the league, which means you can't play in the league. So you'd have to go overseas somewhere. So for example, the whole week leading up to the draft, you know, I had no idea where I was going, and I was very anxious, you know, will I get drafted? Where will I get drafted? What's my career going to be, you know? So, yeah, you have no say at all, and I was, you know, lucky enough to be drafted.
That must be quite unnerving for a young player who's, as you say, you don't really have a lot of say in how your career might pan out. I mean, how difficult is that?
It was very difficult. I remember having a lot of anxiety before and trying to calm that. And then the second that I did get drafted, it just all the anxiety went away immediately. So, you know, I think it's a hard experience for any young athlete to go through. And like I said, I'm just blessed enough that I was actually drafted.
And how is it for a rookie settling into a new side? I interviewed Jill Ellis for the first episode of this show a couple of weeks ago, and I asked her how she kind of works with younger players that maybe are still in college. I used Morgan Brian as an example, who is obviously in the US Women's National Team squad, but is still playing in the college system. For a rookie player who's straight out of college coming into a side, how do you settle in, and how do players and coaches respond to you? Do they treat you any differently, or are you very much treated the same as everyone else?
You're very much treated the same as everyone else. Some of the differences may be like the rookies had to get to practice earlier than everyone else and be ready to go. But overall, I think you're treated the same, you know, as everyone else. I think I was lucky enough to have a group of girls that really welcome the rookies and help us adapt to, you know, the professional life. And, you know, sometimes I'd be at training and I'd look next to me and I'd be like, oh my gosh, A-Rod's right there, Lauren Holiday's right there. You know, I watched them growing up as a younger girl, so it's really just a dream come true, and I'm really thankful for the way that my teammates helped me.
And I'm guessing the response of those type of players, the A-Rods and the Lauren Holidays, and the way that they bring you into the team, is that one of the ways that you try and get over that almost being starstruck kind of state that you are in when you join the club?
Yeah, definitely. You know, both of those two players I mentioned became some of my great friends, and they're just great people, great friends, and I really look up to them, not only on the field because they're amazing players, but the type of people they are off the field. And so I really am thankful for the way that all the girls on the team helped us rookies adapt to the soccer life.
We'll continue to work our way backwards. You were drafted from Santa Clara University. I had the privilege of meeting the head coach of the Santa Clara women's soccer setup, Jerry Smith, earlier this year. He spoke very highly of players like yourself and Julie Johnston, who were obviously drafted, Julie being named Rookie of the Year in the NWSL. How important is it for young players to perform to a high level at the university level or the university stage to ensure that they are being noticed? Because there's so many players, and as you said, there's that anxiety as to whether you're going to be drafted or whether you're going to be picked up. Are you aware of how much focus there is on you guys and how well you need to perform to ensure that you are going to be drafted?
You know, that is something that definitely ran through my mind as a college player, especially my senior year, thinking, you know, I gotta perform, I gotta work hard so that it'll help me later on down the road. But I think the biggest thing was just preparing each day just to try and be better and trying to help your team. I think our team successes at Santa Clara definitely helped Julie and I. Obviously, you know, performing at the individual level, something you need to do as well. But I think focusing on the team is the most important thing.
How much did you enjoy the setup at Santa Clara? Good reputation. We've seen former internationals like Leslie Osborne has come through the setup there. Was that one of the kind of key factors in terms of you deciding to go and join the program there? Was it the fact that you'd seen players come through the system there and go on to represent their country?
You know, I loved my experience at Santa Clara. You know, I went to the University of Nebraska first and I transferred. And when I was transferring, I had the opportunity to talk to Jerry. And the first time I talked to him, he was like, hey, do you have a couple of minutes to talk on the phone? So I said, yes. And he called me. And when I got off the phone, I was out on the phone for 59 minutes, and he was just drilling me with question after question. And, you know, from that moment forward, I was like, I want to play for a guy like this. You know, He's very focused. He's going to get on me, you know, if I mess up. He's going to try and make me better. It's important to him that he helps me, and I could just definitely tell that he cared about knowing who I was, what kind of player I was that time on the phone. And so I flew up to Santa Clara, and I met Jerry and Brandy, and of course, starstruck again by Brandy. You know, I watched her in the World Cup when take off her shirt when I was a little girl, and she was just my biggest idol ever. And so that was a really cool experience. And I met the girls when I was up there, and whenever people say, you know, this, you can just tell, like, this is going to be your home. Like, that's the feeling I got. And I just knew from that moment forward I wanted to be a part of that program. And I really enjoyed my experience there because I felt like Jerry and the rest of the coaching staff not only helped me become a better player, but they really focused on personal life skills that can help you later in the future. And I think that that's something I definitely developed when I was there as well.
Definitely a common theme with Brandy Chastain being a lot of players' hero. I've spoken to a few players. I've actually had the privilege of speaking to Brandy as well. And there certainly seems to be a definite starstruck kind of state for a lot of players when they come into contact with her or speak about her. I guess to try and wrap up this part of the interview, coming back to where we are now, you're currently with Glasgow. You've got a last 16 tie in the UEFA Women's Champions League to look forward to. You've got a Scottish Cup final to look forward to. If I were to ask you, looking forward to 2015, what are your aims and ambitions for the next, say, 12 months?
You know, I just hope that I can work my hardest each and every day to become a better soccer player, become a better person. And I think if I focus on those things, you know, it'll help me reach my goals.
Okay. Nice and brief. That's what I like to hear. Mm-hmm. So going for the light-hearted approach now, can you tell me any funny stories from your time in Glasgow so far or from your rookie season in FC Kansas City?
Ooh, I'm going to have to think about this. Just the top of my head, my roommate here, she's from Ireland, Denise O'Sullivan, and whenever she says the number three, she says tree. So every time she says, I just start dying laughing. And somehow whenever we are somewhere and there's a question asked, somehow the answer is always three. And it's just so weird. And we just start dying laughing, both of us together.
That is the proper thick Irish accent when they say tree and tour. Yeah, absolutely. Heard that many, many, many times before. In terms of your teammates, who is the one who is most likely to say something inappropriate at the most inappropriate of times?
I would say for FC Kansas City, that would be Merritt Mathias. That's definitely her in a nutshell. And, thinking about Glasgow, I would have to say, I don't know if it'd be inappropriate, but, one of our goalkeepers, Autumn, is just a wild woman. She's always dancing around, so hyper, so full of energy that you just never know what she's going to do.
In your young career, who is the best player that you've played with and played against?
It's a really tough question. I would have to say, you know, Lauren Holiday. She's not only a great player, like I said earlier, she's such a great person. And I think her awareness on the field of where her own players are, where the other players are. She's a goal scorer. She's a playmaker. She works really hard. And I just think that she's just the complete package as a player. I don't really know who I played against. I mean, I can only think of that one right now.
Okay, no problem. What's been the highlight of your career so far?
I think there's been multiple. I think winning the NWSL championship was awesome. I think scoring my first goal as a professional was awesome. The first time I got on the field for FC Kansas City playing in my first appearance was just an incredible feeling. It's something I'll always remember. So I think, you know, there's a few things.
Okay, final question. Tell us something about yourself that people might not know about.
I love dogs. And I have two golden retrievers at home that I got for my 16th birthday. And then I have my own little Yorkie poo puppy that I miss very much. And, you know, I would take her. She's so small that she would go in the car with me wherever I'd go. We'd go to the grocery store. We'd go shopping. We'd go to coffee shops. And so I really miss her because whenever I wasn't at training or at games, I'd be hanging out with her. So my parents are taking care of her right now. So I'm excited to get home to her.
Morgan, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining me on this episode of the show, and good luck with the Champions League and the Scottish Cup final.
Thank you, appreciate it.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So many thanks to Morgan for giving us an insight into her time at Glasgow City and, of course, her rookie season in the NWSL. At the time of recording that interview, of course, Morgan was a member of the FC Kansas City team, but this week it was announced that she would be part of a trade with Heather O'Reilly that would see the US Women's National Team player come to FC Kansas City, with Morgan and Cassie Coleman moving in the opposite direction to the Boston Breakers. Now, I was fortunate enough to grab a quick few words with Morgan on the move to Boston, and here's what she had to say.
I found out Hugh Williams, our director of operations, gave me a call and just told me that they've been working out a trade trying to get Heather O'Reilly, and part of that trade was me and Cassie Coleman going to Boston. You know, I'm actually really excited about it. I'm going to miss my teammates. I made some great friends in Kansas City, and, you know, I learned a lot there on the soccer field, but I think this could be a positive move for me. You know, I'm hoping to get more playing time, and I'm really excited that Cassie's going with me as well. We were roommates in Kansas City, so maybe we'll get that chance to room together again. You know, it's going to be sad just because, you know, my family's there, some of my friends. But I went away to California for school. I'm in Scotland now away from my family, and, you know, in the off season I'll be home, so I'll be okay. And now I'll get my puppy back, so I'll be in the States, so I'll be okay. You know, I just hope I can come in and work hard, do anything I can to help the team, and, you know, as a striker, you're expected to create goal-scoring chances for yourself, for your teammates, and so I hope I can do that and just bring whatever I can to the table.
So big thanks to Morgan there for giving us some insight into her move to the Boston Breakers. And seeing as we have just been speaking about Boston and that trade, it would be worth us going for the first time on this show over to our American correspondent, Sarah Gerke, who gives us the latest from the recent CONCACAF World Cup qualification. Sarah, what's been going on in America?
It's been a busy couple of weeks in the United States as they hosted a 2014 CONCACAF Women's Championship across four cities, including Kansas City, Chicago, Washington, D.C., and Philadelphia. The semifinals and finals took place this weekend at PPL Park, home of MLS's Philadelphia Union. It was a thrilling weekend of matches, as one match on each day went to extra time. On Friday, Costa Rica needed 120 minutes plus PKs to win over the underdog Trinidad and Tobago. The Costa Rican goalkeeper saved all three Trinidad penalty kicks. The celebration from Costa was jubilant once they had clinched a spot in the championship match. That spot meant they could finish no lower than second in the tournament and had secured a spot in the 2015 Women's World Cup in Canada. Costa Rica is the first Central American or Caribbean nation to earn a berth to the World Cup. The second semifinal was a bit less exciting, as the United States won easily over Mexico 3-0. Notably, Mexico head coach Leo Cuellar did not include several of his regular starters in his starting 11 against the U.S. Presumably, he recognized his side had little chance to beat the Americans, so he turned his focus to Sunday's third-place match against Trinidad and Tobago. In that match on Sunday, Leo Cuellar and Mexico found themselves tied 2-2 at the end of regulation despite resting several key players. Unfortunately for Trinidad, they were playing their second game with extra time in just 3 days, while over half of the Mexico squad had been resting since midweek. The fresh legs and tournament experience of Mexico shone through, and they scored twice during extra time, eventually bringing the scoreline to 4-2 in their favor. Mexico's win earned them a spot in Canada 2015. Meanwhile, Trinidad will have to play Ecuador in a home-and-away playoff. The first game will take place in Ecuador on November 8th. In the post-game press conference, Mexico head coach Leo Cuellar offered to let Trinidad train in Mexico City to acclimate to the altitude they will deal with in Ecuador. The return leg is scheduled to be played on December 2nd in Trinidad and Tobago. Later that evening, the United States dominated Costa Rica 6-0. The height and physical advantage of the United States over Costa Rica was evident, as five of the six goals scored by the U.S. were headed in. Notably, Costa Rica played a far more open and attacking game than any other team facing the U.S. had previously in the tournament. While those tactics didn't exactly pay off from a scoreline perspective, it did make for a far more enjoyable match to watch. In addition to presenting the championship trophy to the United States, CONCACAF also honored the following players named as part of the best 11 for the tournament. Goalkeeper, Hope Solo, United States. Right defender, Diana Sanz, Costa Rica. Left defender, Megan Klingenberg, United States. Central defender, Whitney Engen, United States. Central defender, Christy Rampone, United States. Left midfielder, Kristen Press, United States. Right midfielder, Kenya Cordner, Trinidad and Tobago. Center midfielder, Carly Lloyd, United States. Central midfielder, Shirley Cruz, Costa Rica. Forward, Abby Wambach, United States. Forward, Veronica Charlin Corral, Mexico. The U.S. swept the individual awards as Carly Lloyd won the Golden Ball for Best Individual Performance of the Tournament. Abby Wambach earned the Golden Boot for most goals scored in the tournament at 7. And Hope Solo won the Golden Glove for Best Goalkeeping Performances of the Tournament. Additionally, the Fair Play Award went to Costa Rica. There was also plenty of action off the pitch as two major trades were made during the tournament. First, the Houston Dash acquired Carly Lloyd from the Western New York Flash. In return, the Flash received Becky Edwards, Whitney Engen, and a third-round pick in the 2016 NWSL College Draft. The other major trade during the tournament sent Heather O'Reilly from the Boston Breakers to FC Kansas City in exchange for Cassie Kallman and Morgan Marlborough. There was quite a bit of news and movement in just a couple of weeks, but now most players will have a bit of time off and the news cycle in the United States will slow down a bit. That's all for now. Thanks, Kieran.
Big thanks to Sarah there, and of course congratulations to the teams that have qualified from the CONCACAF qualifying tournament. Now, for the first time on this show, we will go down to the W League in Australia, and I welcome Rachel Collier, who is an expat from the United Kingdom, currently residing in Perth. So, Rachel, what's been going on in Australia?
Yes, Jonas, just over halfway through Season 7 of the Westfield W League, and what a season it's been so far. We've had goals galore, shot results, and we've seen records broken as we approach Round 8. Perth Glory have been in sensational form. The additions of Sam Kerr, Caitlin Ford, Alana Kennedy, goalkeeper Mackenzie Arnold and Canadian international Shalina Zdorsky have set the W League alight. The Glory won their first 6 games, conceding 4 goals and scoring 21. Their most emphatic victory came over the Western Sydney Wanderers. The Glory put 10 past them, with Kate Gill scoring 5 in that game to set a new W League record for the amount of goals scored in one game. With wins over Brisbane Roar, the Newcastle Jets, Adelaide United, Canberra United and Sydney FC, Perth Glory have set a club and league record for the best start to a W League season ever made. The mix of older new faces in the Glory squad have set them apart from the chasing pack, as Glory sit 5 points clear of 2nd place Sydney FC at the top of the W League ladder. Glory's winning streak was ended last time out by a resilient Adelaide United side, whose only victories have come against Canberra United and Perth Glory. The home side inflicted a 1-0 defeat over a Glory side missing Sam Kerr and captain Colette McCullum. Adelaide will go into their Round 8 tie against the Newcastle Jets, looking for their 3rd consecutive win. Up next, the Glory face the Melbourne Victory side, who are themselves hoping to bounce back from a 1-0 home defeat by Canberra United. The Victory currently sit in 5th position and will be hoping to claw themselves back into the top 4 with a win over a strong Glory side. Last season's Grand Final winners are a solid team and the addition of Christine Nunn has been a revelation. The club's strength and depth will be tested in the second half of the season as they will play in the International Women's Club Championship, which has the potential to cause a hectic fixture schedule. Last season ladder winners Canberra United have been in indifferent form and sit 4th in the ladder behind a vastly improved Newcastle Jets side who finished in last place in Season 6. The Jets' turnaround can be put down to some strong off-field recruitment. The Newcastle side are much stronger across the park this season, but it is their midfield who have really shone, with the likes of Emily Van Egmond and Angela Salem in top form. The Jets have inflicted impressive defeats over Melbourne Victory, the Western Sydney Wanderers and Adelaide United. Last time out, they put 4 past Brisbane Roar to run out 4-1 winners over a sorry-looking Roar side who sit bottom of the ladder. Last year's grand finalists have struggled for form and have only 1 win and a 1 draw to their name thus far. The two-time champions require added input across the board if they are to finish in a respectable ladder position. The team need to see more from Christina Gorey, Hayley Rosso and the returning Amy Chapman to salvage something from their season. The Roar will be looking to pick up points when they make the trip to Sydney FC this weekend. Season 7 has been a topsy-turvy one for clubs at both ends of the table. Sydney have encountered back-to-back defeats to Perth Glory and then to local rivals the Western Sydney Wanderers last time out. The Wanderers won their first ever derby 2-1 to leave Sydney stunned. The Sky Blues have seen massive upheaval this season with changes in coaching and playing staff alike. The Sydney side have the best defensive record in the league, however, striker Jasmine Spencer requires more support up front as the team are struggling to regularly score multiple goals. Meanwhile, the Wanderers are having an inconsistent season and are throwing up some surprising results with 2-1 wins over both Brisbane and Sydney FC. However, their lack of experience has resulted in some damaging defeats. The Wanderers face a trip to fourth place Canberra United, who will be hoping to build on their 1-0 away win over Melbourne Victory last time out. This Canberra United side have real quality with the likes of Michelle Heyman and Ashley Sykes up front. However, they need to improve their conversion rate as some bad misses and defensive slips in concentration have led to points being dropped. Round 8 fixtures are as follows. Canberra United host the Western Sydney Wanderers. Brisbane Roar travel to Sydney FC. Melbourne Victory host Perth Glory, whilst Adelaide travel to the Newcastle Jets. The conclusion to the W League season is sure to be a great one. I'll keep you up to date with your W League news bi-weekly here on the Women's Soccer Zone. I've been Rachel Collier. Thank you for listening.
Big thanks there to Rachel. I'm sure everyone will agree, a very valuable addition to Women's Soccer Zone, and I look forward to hearing her updates from the W League down in Australia. Nearly brings us to the end of the show. Just a very quick piece of information for those who are based in Ireland. I was contacted by Rachel Stack, who is a big women's football follower and does some work on the Irish League, and she sent me a message saying, Kieran, can you promote the Irish champions, Raheny United, who are set to play UCD Waves in this season's FAI Continental Tires Senior Cup Final on the 2nd of November at 12:20 p.m. The Cup Final is the final game of a competition of familiar format to the English FA Cup, where it includes all senior clubs across Ireland, not just the teams of the Continental Tires Women's National League. The game is set to take place in the Aviva Stadium, Dublin, home of the Irish men's soccer and rugby teams. It's the second Women's Cup final and women's game to be played at the venue. The game will be live on national broadcast to RTE and available online via the RTE player. The game should be an exciting fixture with both teams packed with both senior and underage international Irish players. So there you go, Rachel. I promised I would read it out, and I hope that anyone who is based in Ireland or around the area where the Cup Final is being played in Dublin does pop along and supports one of, if not both, of the two teams. So that finishes our roundup, and when we come back, we will conclude this second episode of Women's Soccer Zone.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So that brings us to the end of episode 2 of Women's Soccer Zone. Thank you very much to those that have tuned in. Big thanks to Morgan Marlborough giving up her time to speak to us. And of course, thanks to our correspondents, Rachel Collier, Sarah Gerke, Linda Erickson, Foods Dell and Brian Maguire. I did mention in our intro that we would talk about the European World Cup qualification playoffs, but with the games in the middle of the first and second leg matches, I think it's probably best I go through them in the next episode. Currently, as I go to record, Scotland are 2-1 down from the first leg that was played in Edinburgh, and Italy are 2-1 up in their tie against the Ukraine. So we'll certainly cover off those games in the next episode. If you wish to follow us on Twitter, you can do. We are on at WOSO Zone, which is W-O-S-O Zone. If you wish to listen to the show online, you can do. We are on audioboom.com/WOSO Zone, or you can download us on iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone. If you wish to email us and give us any feedback, please do so. Good or bad, we'll always take it on board. You can catch us on WOSOZone@gmail.com. And in the next show, I will also give away the Jess Fishlock jersey that I spoke about in the first episode, or certainly promoted on Twitter. So for now, thank you very much for tuning in, and I will speak to you all very soon. Bye-bye.